You're listening to a DM podcast.
This podcast was created and produced on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Gadigal people. The creators of this podcast would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of those lands and extend that acknowledgement to the elders past and present, and also to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples listening today.
Hello and welcome to Kinky History, the podcast where we discuss all of the dirty little secrets they probably left out of your history books. Now, one thing about history that I find very interesting is that we've always lived on the same beautiful planet. No matter the different societies we've lived in, the different times we've lived in, we've all shared the same love of nature, human connection, and a view of the beautiful solar system. The stars and the planets and this galaxy have always played an important role in our love life. And in fact, they have their own very kinky history. And who better to discuss that today than Australia and the internet's resident space expert, Kirstin Banks. I am so excited to have you here, Kirstin.
Hi.
Kirstin is a PhD in astrophysicist. She is an internet sensation. She is a science sweetheart. The list goes on. Also, TEDx extraordinaire. I'm still getting over what a fantastic talk that you gave. Kirstin, thank you for being here.
I'm excited. And I'll be honest, a little nervous.
A little nervous. Now, Kirstin, we met like back in 2021. Is that correct?
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And it was at this TikTok end of year event. And out of the list of people, stars, one might say, that I was so excited to meet, you were top of the list because we'd had such a beautiful connection and communication prior to this, just online, just kind of, you know, hyping one another up as academic women on the internet. And then as soon as I met you, we just kind of, a planetary alignment, we just gravitated to one another.
I'm just going to speak in my language, gal.
I know very little about how space works, so I'm really going to be testing my euphemisms today. I think it's really interesting as well because kinky history and space aren't two things.
People think they're worlds apart, but people have proven time and time, or we have proven time and time again, that they kind of go hand in hand.
Very surprisingly.
Like, there are some kinky scientists out there from history as well. And just some weird stories too.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I don't feel like you can stay in a lab very long without being a bit kinky. Like, that's a long-term fixation. You've got to know how to, like, keep yourself amused.
Oh, 100%. I mean, like, if you think, so this is what it's like as an astronomer, where I have to stay up all night to look at the stars.
Hey.
But the room that I'm in, it's not like being outside and like, oh, pretty stars. No, we are in a windowless room for hours.
No.
With like 8 computer screens, which all of them are so important. You need to look at the instrument and what it's doing, the telescope and what it's doing, the clouds, if they're coming in to ruin the day, we've got to make sure we keep an eye on them.
That's going to be so annoying.
But it's like a dungeon.
Like a kinky dungeon.
It could very well be a kinky dungeon.
Do you want me to decorate your astronomy center?
Oh, please. That would be so funny. The next time someone like logs on and sees the room, like, what has gone on here?
Hey, babe, so why exactly do we have that spanking horse at the back? Like,
no, it's to keep us awake during the night. If I got a slap every now and then during the night, I would stay up a lot easier.
Revolutionizing the astronomy way of being. This is wonderful. But the first time we tried to kind of put our very different academic minds together, TikTok approached us to try and do like a collaboration and come together as two of their resident PhD teachers on TikTok. And I remember us just having this call at the first, being like, what on earth do we talk about?
Yeah.
And then that's how Kinky Space Facts was kind of born.
Yeah. Just an idea just popped into my head. It's like, you know what? Let's roll with it.
Because it seems to be like, while, you know, this entire podcast is about the fact that humans have always been very, very kinky, humans have also always been into trying to understand the worlds and the stars and everything far beyond us. You know, even before we understood that there was another planet
yeah. other than ours.
Absolutely.
We've always been looking to the stars, especially for guidance. And, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's your PhD. You're looking at stars that are billions of years old, millions of years old.
Yeah, billions to millions of years old, depending on how massive they are. Live fast, die young. Massive stars do it well. That's the way it goes.
Please tell me that's the title of your thesis.
I have definitely slid that into some of my abstracts.
Great.
But we've been, as a human race, we've been so enthralled with the night sky for millennia. Yeah. Like it's, I love it so much. For many, many reasons, but one in particular is that it's so accessible.
Mm.
You just go outside and look up.
Yeah.
It's there.
It's there.
All around us.
But I mean, I think I'm a historian and, you know, the stuff I work with is 250 years old for most
of
the time.
Yeah, literally.
And I remember I was like talking about our theses for the first time and I'm like, okay, you are working with light history.
Mm-hmm.
Billions of years old. We're talking like pre-dinosaurs, right? Like
pre-dinosaurs
are not even there.
Like dinosaurs are so young compared to the histories that I'm looking at. Like I am trying to figure out the history of our galaxy.
Right.
And our galaxy, do you want to take a guess of how old it is?
11 billion.
You're actually really close.
Really?
13.1 billion years old.
Get out. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So close. I'm going to give that to me. You will now be officially the oldest history we've discussed on this podcast because when we had Miles from the TikTok 10 on, we did go to prehistoric dinosaur kinky history, which was wonderful. He told me that there is something called a scrotum humongous.
Yeah, that was my reaction as well,
which apparently is a dinosaur fossil that we have. And it's not, sadly, of the balls of a dinosaur.
Oh.
It's the start of his leg bone, but it does look like a pair of balls.
Oh, excellent.
And that's how that dinosaur was remembered. And I thought that was the oldest piece of history we're going to have on the show.
13.1 billion years.
13.1
and
billion
that,
years.
And that's what I'm trying to do with my thesis. Piece together 13.1 billion years of history.
That's
figure out why the heck are we here.
You can do that in a 3-year thesis, can't you?
I am attempting to.
Now, I want to pick your brain. Tell me some kinky space facts to do with our galaxy.
So, I think the best way to go here is going back to ancient Greece. But it's a history of why we actually call the Milky Way the Milky Way. The reason why we call it the Milky Way is because the ancient Greek gods,
yep.
Zeus, had a son with a mortal woman, Heracles.
Yes.
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 Zeus wanted to make that mortal son immortal. How did he want to do that? With his sleeping wife, Hera, he took the baby to her bosom to suckle at the milk of Hera.
Does she know? Like, does she know?
She's asleep.
Oh, she's asleep.
She's
it's
asleep.
Like a Sleeping Beauty situation.
Mm-hmm. She wakes up. What the heck is a baby doing on my boob? Swats the baby away and milk spurts out from her bosom to then create the Milky Way galaxy as we know it.
So are you telling me that that beautiful thing of stars we see is someone's booby juice?
Yes.
It's the booby juice way.
Not even just someone's booby juice. A Greek goddess's booby juice.
That is Hera's booby juice. Wonderful. I'm loving that Hera is just like capable of breastfeeding on demand. Like that's a skill.
Mm-hmm.
Just pumping it out. That is so interesting because I feel like I know I've questioned why the Milky Way is called the Milky Way. I love that Zeus and Hera just seem to be at like the center of so much Greek kinky mythology. Like the two of them, I mean, Zeus gets around.
Oh yeah,
Zeus, like this god was getting around. He was sending himself into dolphins, lions, tigers, oh my. Ooh. To fuck people. Like mortals, humans, gods, it just didn't matter. Like Zeus was just going for it. But I brought you a kinky space thing.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, and just coincidentally with your entire Milky Way thing, it's got Zeus and Hera in it.
Oh!
But it's about, okay, I know star signs aren't your thing, and everyone gets continually confused between astrophysics and astronomy.
I mean, they're beautiful constellations in the sky. They have nothing to do with our personalities or our day-to-day lives, except they're pretty.
Can you give us like a bit of a definitional difference between astronomy and astrophysics?
Perfectly can. Astrology, not science. Astronomy, science. Done.
That was so concise.
I have done this a lot.
So we're going to be talking about Ganymede?
Yes. It's one of Jupiter's moons. And I think, I'm pretty sure, because all the planets are named after Roman gods, and I think Jupiter is the equivalent of Zeus. I know a little thing about Jupiter, is that the moons are all named after his concubines.
Oh,
essentially.
Sexy.
Right? So I'm going to guess here that this story of Zeus and Ganymede is that they get it on somehow.
It is about concubines. That was a really wonderful, scientifically documented guess. Kind of
got
you for that. Kind of love you. So Ganymede, who is this handsome, absolutely gorgeous prince from Troy, and everyone's just like, you're beautiful, we love you. Like, OG kind of fuckboy is what I'm thinking here. But beautiful. Like, pretty, knows he's pretty kind of vibe, right? And so he was so beautiful that everyone fell in love with him. Like, men, women, everyone is in love with Ganymede. But because he's a prince and he was so physically attractive, no one wanted to actually make a move. They're like, he's out of our league. Like, oh my God, not going to do it. Apart from Zeus, who is like big dick energy.
Mm-hmm.
Big daddy. And so Zeus, takes Ganymede and she's like, you know what, you'll come in with me back to Olympus and you're going to be my cupbearer and my lover. Yes, because that's like the natural two things that you do. You're just like, hey, babe, do you want a drink? No, I want your ass. Like, that's how that works.
There's no in between. Just one.
You got to hydrate sometimes in the middle. So, you know, the thing is that Zeus is still married to Hera in the middle of fucking everyone and making her spill out her breast juice over the galaxy.
Yep.
He is still married to Hera. And so in the middle of falling absolutely desperately in love with Ganymede, Hera's like, no, we're not just going to have this guy in our bedroom all the time. It's not. And like the wrath of Hera just comes down on Ganymede and she goes full dominatrix. But then because Hera's like, you know what, you gotta go, boy. Ganymede also becomes this fighter and is like, you know what, Zeus, you've got me here. You've made me fuck you, I've had to deal with your wife. As a result, I want you to bring rain down on the earth and actually heal the fact that everyone's in a massive drought right now. And Zeus is like, fair enough. I will satisfy my lover and my wife. It rains and Ganymede is immortalized as the star sign Aquarius.
Oh, the water bearer. He's got the cups.
Yes. The concubine of Zeus.
That's so cute.
Yeah. Well, that is my that's my kinky star fact for you.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay, so I love Jupiter. And this brings me back again. So the moons are the concubines, right? Yep. Jupiter's a big gassy boy.
Jupiter is the James Joyce of the planet, attracting its lovers with its farts. I'm getting it.
But yes, so Jupiter, it's big gassy boy, has 92 moons.
God, I can't imagine having 92 people on the go at a time. I can't remember that many names.
It seems so stressful. But the funniest part about this is that NASA sent a probe to Jupiter.
It sounds like Jupiter was already being probed.
With the 92 concubines. Yeah. There is no way I could have unscientifically said that without saying probe. Anyway, so they sent a probe to Jupiter. But guess what? They named it Juno, which is the Roman equivalent of Hera. So they sent his wife to check on him and his concubines.
Stop it! Even now, the ancient Greek drama continues. I love that. Does the astrophysics community get a little bit kinky at times? Is there any, like, kinky gossip stories that we can really pull out of the modern-day science world at all?
Oh, 100%. So a scientist that I'm sure many people who are within the physics realm would know, Stephen Hawking.
Oh, wait, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Black hole dude.
Yeah.
This isn't about Stephen Hawking being kinky.
Oh.
It's about another scientist by the name of Kip Thorne.
Uh-huh.
Being a little kinky. So Kip Thorne, he's a black hole expert. He has a Nobel Prize in his work for black holes. We didn't know that black holes existed until some time ago, a few decades ago.
That's pretty recent.
It's pretty recent, right? Like, you had Einstein, he predicted them. It's actually Beaver predicted a few hundred years beforehand. Maybe 100, I'm not sure. You're the historian, not me. No, so we know about black holes, but we hadn't found any yet.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a signal from within the galaxy that people thought, oh, this could be a black hole. This could be the first black hole. How exciting. Ooh. And Kip Thorne and Stephen Hawking had a very famous bet on whether this signal was actually a black hole or not. So Kip Thorne was on the side of, yeah, definitely a black hole.
That's it.
That's it. Stephen Hawking, not too sure. Probably not a black hole. So they had a bet. What were the stakes?
I'm guessing it's not just like an exchange of money here that we're
absolutely
talking.
Not. No. If Stephen Hawking were to win the bet, i.e. this signal was not a black hole,
yeah,
then Kip Thorne would have to buy a subscription to a very intellectual magazine for Stephen Hawking. If Kip Thorne won, whereas the signal was a black hole, Stephen Hawking would have to buy a subscription to Penthouse magazine for Kip Thorne.
Is it like, is the Penthouse subscription, like, does it have to be under Stephen Hawking's name, though?
I think so. I would like a subscription, please, but not for me. It's actually for my friend.
It's a friend. It's like, that's actually where the line came from. It's not for me. It's for my friend.
Yeah.
It's a bet, I swear.
But
so
yes,
who won?
Kip Thorne won. It was indeed a black hole. Cygnus X won. It was indeed a black hole. And so he got a subscription paid for by Stephen Hawking to Penthouse magazine.
I really want to know that end of the phone call. Like, I know, I'm sure the Penthouse people have to deal with people making awkward subscription calls all of the time, but it's just so good coming from such a, like, a prolific academic figure.
And not to mention the robotic voice that it would have come through for his voice.
They probably thought it was a prank call. That is really wonderful. Well, I mean, speaking about black holes, I did ask, you know, listeners of the podcast and followers on Instagram to submit some questions for you.
Oh, no.
Some of them were less serious than others, which includes my favourite one, where someone has just flat out asked, can you bleach a black hole?
Well, look, okay, look, you can definitely send bleach to a black hole, but you're never getting that bleach back.
It's not like an anal bleaching
scenario.
One of them, which I think is great to talk about because this still makes me laugh, and I have a quote here from it. Tell me, what comes to mind when I say 100 tampons?
Ah. Oh. 100 tampons!
So tell me the story. Tell me the story.
There is this wonderful female astronaut, Sally Ride. She was the first American female astronaut to go to the International Space Station for a week. Her mission was for a week. And NASA's like, oh, women do be perioding. Do you think 100 tampons should be enough for a week? I mean, realistically, yeah, it is more than enough. But my goodness, 100 tampons for a bloody week. Oh, well, a very bloody week, apparently.
A very bloody week, apparently. There was a quote that came from someone who was writing a profile about Sally Ride. This comes from Anne Friedman, and she said, in preparation for Ride's trip aboard the space shuttle, tampons were packed with their strings connecting them like a strip of sausages so that they wouldn't float away. Engineers asked Ride, is 100 the right number? She would be in space, of course, for a week. That would not be the right number, she told them. Apparently, the male engineers then replied that they just wanted to be safe.
Look, my goodness, did they reveal that they do not have girlfriends.
Just no idea how the female reproductive system works whatsoever. I'm just imagining that they would have had to have like an entire space room in the shuttle just dedicated to these tampons just sneaking around. Can you imagine like trying to have a conversation at the start of the shuffle and all of a sudden this tampon snake's like, sorry, just coming past. Also, why get them out of their packages? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Why? That wasn't necessary.
No,
that wasn't necessary.
They come in a little box.
Yeah.
It's sweet.
This one, I'm just interested in your answer for this. Do you think that space sex is an issue that needs to be solved, or is it just not worth addressing? Mm. I am assuming they're talking about the fact that astronauts who can go away for many, many years can't really copulate. Do we know? Do they fuck on the space shuttle?
NASA has to disclose all information that comes from
literally
space. All information must be disclosed because it's a public agency. So every single photo we get, every single bit of information we get, it's disclosed. It's public information.
Right.
And there hasn't been any public information of the sort.
SpaceX. That's like not the 100-mile club. That's like the that's 1-billion-mile club.
So I think there was a report about a married couple going up into space and having sex, but it was disputed. It was misinformation.
Misinformation. No.
But here's a funny thing. So the missions to Mars, for example.
Yes.
A concern is that, you know, male and female astronauts would have sex on the way over there. It's a 9-month mission to get to Mars.
It's like a staple human need.
Yeah. So they thought the best way to mitigate this is to have an all-female crew.
Right.
Because,
girl power.
No sex is going to happen on an all-female crew.
Yes. I remember the headlines when this happened, and it was like, NASA doesn't remember that lesbians exist.
Yeah.
I remember reading that some space toilets did make like a wank safe space, but one of the problems was about like discharge floating.
I have no information about space floating cum, but however, there is like the way men pee in space is like into
tell
a tube.
Tell me about that.
It's just into a tube.
So you can't wank into a tube.
Surely that would be the next obvious step,
thing,
right?
Like tube.
The tube's there, it will suction. Oh my.
Where does the cum go?
They do. Apparently they use that urine as like a recyclable water thing. So maybe.
So you've got to have a different tube for your cum. And then can you imagine how awkward it is when you go into the bathroom and be like, oh, don't worry, you can use the urine tube because I'm going to use the cum tube. Like, and you're like, you know how planes just like drop their stuff occasionally? Yeah. Can you imagine just like, it's raining cum. Hallelujah. It's the cum tube. Okay, so cum, put a pin in it. We don't know what happened. This was a really good one. How open, in your experience, is the astrophysics community to the LGBTQ community? I'm a gay and trans person who wants to become an astrophysicist.
Oh, yes. Join us. In my experience, it's been very welcoming. I've had a very good experience. I mean, just as a woman in a male-dominated field.
Yeah.
I've had a very good experience. I've been feel very privileged.
We love this.
Which is awkward because, like, it shouldn't be a privilege. It should be a right. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I know so many people who are on a part of the LGBTQIA+ community.
Yeah.
Join us.
Love it. So, you know, on the topic of aliens, I want to know your opinion on, like, alien-based sex toys.
Can't say I have experienced any of them or seen.
What
does this look like?
Well, I mean, do you know what? I think this really caught on after Star Wars. There was a...
Of course it did.
There was a big outpouring of, like, alien-based lingerie and sex toys, you know. Some of them are weird, right? They're kind of like eggs that you can insert inside you and they, like, birth. Like something almost comes out of them. Yeah, like it's really weird. It's like an alien baby. But this became a massive kink, and it's kind of related to like tentacle pornography, of this idea of like aliens birthing inside of you. Like it's a really popular pornographic category.
It seems almost like a parasitic sort of kink.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so interesting.
It is really interesting. And like tentacle porn kind of caught on in the 19th century Japan because of censorship laws, right? And they had to, artists were banned from depicting genitals. So instead they're like, well, I was illustrating this story about a girl who dived under the water and, you know, gets killed by octopuses. And he's like the first one who kind of depicts all of Hokusai, who did the wave painting, depicts all of her body, you know, covered in squids who are literally sucking her off instead. But then it catches on because artists were like, oh, we can actually do this. We can use tentacles as censorship. And now because since we do that so often in anime and manga, tentacles have caught on. Yeah. And I think that's now really related that when Star Wars came out, a lot of the way they got past all of the comic book illustrations that were quite highly sexual but still had to be accessible was this alien porn stuff. And then, you know, it brings us to, have you seen Sex Education,
yeah.
the Netflix show?
Yeah.
That like beautiful moment at the end of the second season where they put on Romeo and Juliet, but it's an alien tentacle erotic fest. And like, that's how popular this fetish is, that it can even be like depicted in this high school setting, because we know that people find aliens hot. But you know, that's how kinks can kind of catch on. You can see something one time, and because you're aroused, it sticks.
Yeah.
Haven't looked up alien porn yet.
There's no day like today, isn't
there? No day like today. I really like this, and I would love to hear just this on the podcast. Someone, comment rather than a question. I love it when Kirsten shares about how Australian First Nations interpreted the stars, which was the topic of your TED Talk, right?
Indeed, yes. 65,000 plus years of history. Again, so much culture and so much like depth to the information and observations that Aboriginal peoples have seen and used throughout this time. I mean, from knowing when is the right time to go looking for certain foods, to knowing when the seasons are changing, even to indicate when certain ceremonies should happen when a planet is in a particular spot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is so incredible to see how much knowledge there is in this land that we now call Australia.
Talking about history, the oldest culture on Earth.
And we're still here.
Yeah.
Longest continuous living culture in the world.
60,000 years or something
like that. Yeah, it's even getting close to like 85,000 years with different like evidences that they're finding up in the Pilbara, for example. It just keeps getting bigger. It's awesome.
That's incredible. And all coming back to the stars.
All coming back to stars, that's right. The night sky is like the canvas for our stories and our lessons that we learn.
I love this, Kirsten. It has been an absolute privilege to have you on this podcast. This has been a wild, informative, and just frankly incredible chat. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been so much fun.
Who knew kink history and space facts had so much in common? Well, we have to have you back on sometime soon. But thank you so much for being here today.
Always a pleasure.
And enjoying this absolute orgasm climax of education and alien spunky mess that we've had today. And Kirsten, where can everyone go to find you if they want to hear plenty more of your Astro Kirsten space facts?
That's it. You can come to me at Astro Kirsten on all the social medias, TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter as well. We'll see how long that lasts. But I have some exciting news coming up soon, actually.
Yes, tell us.
I'm broadening my horizons and doing a little comedy show. So I'll be a part of a comedy science experience called The Steam Room, which is going to be at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival on the 18th and 19th of April.
Woo.
We're going to be at the Enmore Theatre for the Sydney Comedy Festival on the 4th of May, Ultimate Nerd Day. I'm so excited.
Yes.
And then also the Brisbane Comedy Festival on the 11th of May as well.
Get your tickets. And if you want more kinky history, you can find me on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And if you enjoyed our lesson today, then use this as your star sign to have a little rendezvous under the stars with your chosen lover or lovers. And once you're all done and finished, then I will see you next time at Kinky History.
Oh!